Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much, Rob. And I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop, Current Perspectives on Cancer Survivorship. And today's program is supported by Gilead, an educational grant from Daiichi Sankyo, and Johnson & Johnson Healthcare Systems, Inc. And I really want to thank them for their support of this program. Now, before I introduce our first speaker, I'd like to do two things. First of all, I'd like to just let you know about who's on the call. There's about 316 participants on the call today. And you come from all the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have international participants from Botswana, Canada, Germany, Puerto Rico, and the United Kingdom. So this is truly a global call as well. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Andrew Roth. And Dr. Roth is emeritus attending psychiatrist, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer, Memorial Hospital for Cancer and Allied Diseases, Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences, Professor Emeritus of Clinical Psychiatry, Weill Cornell Medical College. And Dr. Roth will be addressing an overview of cancer survivorship and coping with the fear of recurrence. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Roth.
Thank you, Carolyn, and good afternoon to all of you who are on the East Coast of the United States. It's a pleasure to participate in this Cancer Care Symposium on Survivorship with such an esteemed panel. I worked as a psychiatrist at Memorial Sloan Kettering for 30 years, taking care of people going through cancer treatment and as survivors. A cancer diagnosis can create a fork in the road of life that no one wants to travel on. In fact, after being diagnosed and treated for cancer, many people have the hope or expectation that life will just get back to their old normal, or at least they can look forward to a new and stable normal. And that may be possible for some, but for many others, fear and hesitancy exist even if the cancer is treated successfully and the words cure or full remission are used. There may be unforeseen and unfamiliar detours ahead in life, and indeed, some feel if cancer can occur once, seemingly out of nowhere, why can't a second one develop, or something even worse? It may take a while to adapt to this new role of survivorship. And survivorship brings on many questions like, what do we mean when we talk about someone being a cancer survivor? Back in the 1980s, the National Coalition for Cancer Survivorship was formed. And at that time, the term cancer survivor was used to reference those who, following treatment for their cancer, remain disease-free or having no evidence of cancer for 5 or more years after that treatment. But it was realized that people couldn't put their lives on hold to see if they would be alive in 5 years. Even in that early period, more than half of those diagnosed and treated could be expected to survive 5 years, and many even decades longer. People couldn't wait 5 years to make decisions about fertility preservation or to make decisions about different treatments with different toxicities over different periods of time. These were considerations that needed to be made before treatment began, when the maximum amount of options remained available. So, people were called cancer survivors from the moment of diagnosis and for the balance of that person's life. But cancer survivor wasn't meant just to be a label. Many people reject this definition when thinking of themselves. For instance, people don't talk about heart attack survivors or diabetes survivors, and others don't feel like they survived something as challenging or as life-threatening as war or a disaster or an assault to warrant such a title of survivor. Still others feel they more than just survived their illness, but rather see themselves as thrivers. Still others don't wish to think about or dwell on this period of their lives at all and simply want to move on. Regardless of how one feels about the label survivor, it was an important message to convey that of hope, that there can be good and meaningful life after cancer, no matter how long that life is. That should be acknowledged and pursued. And this might also help to change the dialogue between patients and their healthcare providers about the cancer care, so we can ensure that conversations about care would occur as best as possible before treatment started, to make sure that individuals received care that took their personal preferences, needs, and desires into consideration in the informed decision-making process. That the focus would not be solely on cure, but would also integrate quality of life goals. The growing number of cancer survivors around the world who are living longer has slowly shifted the focus of care to one in which attention is increasingly paid to how long a person can live in good health, not merely lifespan or length of survival. The term survivorship includes a focus on the long-term or persistent effects of cancer and its treatment on the physical, emotional, cognitive, social, financial, and existential parts of life, including the late occurring effects that may appear months or years after therapy ends, interventions to prevent and mitigate adverse effects, and how and what cancer follow-up care should be delivered, when, where, and by whom, to maximize the health and well-being of those living with and beyond cancer. Lasting and potentially late occurring effects of cancer are why we have come to realize that having an action plan for the future is helpful. The survivorship care plan is a living document that has two parts, a treatment summary and a plan of care going forward. Ideally, this is something that is shared and discussed at the end of acute treatment between the patient or survivor and her or his care team as they transition to post-treatment or maintenance. It would include details about the cancer, treatment performed, whether surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, or some combination, as well as the use of hormonal therapy, immunotherapy, or biologic treatments, and finally, any major treatment-related adverse events. It would also include planned surveillance or follow-up for recurrence, assessment of lingering or long-term effects of treatment, such as fatigue or pain syndromes, an assessment for risk of late-occurring effects, which may show up months or years later. And the fourth and important component to the plan is a delineation of who is going to be responsible for delivering and coordinating this care, as well as the primary care that the patient or the survivor will require as they live longer. Sometimes the scariest words to hear are, "Don't worry, now that you've been treated, everything will be fine." Fear of recurrence after cancer treatment is common, regardless of prognosis. This can impair quality of life for the patient and caregiver, and if fear of dying remains front and center, people can stop living a meaningful life today. They wind up living a cancer-oriented life based on timelines and the future. Pain or symptoms from cancer treatment may confuse body signals. Many new symptoms may wrongly be assessed as a return of the cancer. These are important to discuss with your doctors. It's not burdensome to ask for instructions and reassurance as you enter this world of a survivor. Ask if there are things you can do to jumpstart that process. There are some thought traps that people can fall into that can lead to feeling worse and more pessimistic. For instance, there's the danger of all or none thinking. For instance, the results of my blood test or scan will mean life or death, and that might have someone feeling down, anxious, and not sleeping for days or weeks before the test and even after the results come through, even if they're good results. It is more often useful to discuss and learn about fear of recurrence from your oncology team than online from Dr. Google. Ask about potential signs of recurrence that are particular to you and your cancer treatment from your treatment team rather than from the experiences of others you've heard of or known with cancer or read about online. Meditation, exercise, and journaling can all help decrease anxiety and improve mood. Adjustment to life after cancer treatment is a process that may take time and ongoing effort and support, but it is attainable. Thank you for your attention.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Roth. That was really an outstanding, really a stellar presentation. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, and I think that just a wonderful, just covered a lot of it. You set the context really for today's program, so thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Guadalupe Palos. And Dr. Palos she's actually her own healthcare team. She's a doctor of public health, master's in social work, and an RN as well. So she's former clinical protocol administration manager, Office of Cancer Survivorship, the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, author and researcher in survivorship, healthcare disparities, and caregiving. And Dr. Palos will be addressing quality of life concerns and managing post-treatment side effects and late effects. It's my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Palos.
Thank you for your introduction, Dr. Messner, and for inviting me to join this esteemed panel. And thank you, Dr. Roth, for establishing a solid foundation for today's call. It is well recognized that a diagnosis of cancer disrupts the life of the patient, their caregivers, and family members. The cancer diagnosis completely shifts needs, priorities, roles, and plans. These challenges begin at diagnosis, last during treatment, and often last or may last throughout the survivorship experience. Today, I will focus on the relationship between quality of life concerns and the survivorship experience. So what is quality of life? It's a subjective, which means it's personalized to each person, multidimensional, has lots of components, and dynamic, keeps moving, process that shifts priorities at each stage of disease and throughout the survivorship experience. It's a concept often based on two outcomes. The first is the patient's ability to perform daily activities related to physical, psychological, and social well-being. And the second component refers to the degree of satisfaction regarding one's level of function and control over their symptoms and treatment. So for the interest of time and convenience, I will refer to this concept, quality of life, as QOL from now on. QOL includes the patient's positive and negative subjective perceptions about various aspects of the cancer experience. These aspects or dimensions, as they're sometimes referred to, encompass physical, mental, emotional, social, and cognitive functions, and most importantly, disease symptoms and treatment side effects. Thus, with these multiple dimensions, QOL has become a yardstick, so to speak, or a measure for assessing the prognosis and effectiveness of treatment, both for patients and clinicians. In fact, you may have been asked to complete questionnaires that provide critical information to your providers about these dimensions. These data assist your providers in developing a coordinated treatment plan to meet your needs at various stages of your diagnosis. As I mentioned, QOL is a fluid concept that shifts at each stage of disease or survivorship. However, long-term and late effects of treatment often are experienced by survivors. And these types of side effects may lead to a decrease in a patient's quality of life. All cancer survivors need follow-up care. I'll say that again. All cancer survivors need follow-up care to catch side effects that can negatively influence their health. Follow-up care for cancer means seeing a healthcare provider for regular checkups after treatment. And Dr. Shapiro will provide details of the importance of follow-up care later in this discussion. Side effects can be unintentional, unexpected, or unwanted. And cancer survivors can experience late or long-term side effects. Late side effects often occur after treatment ends. These side effects can happen months or years after cancer treatment. Long-term or chronic side effects start during treatment and continue even after it's over. Examples of these type of side effects include fatigue, memory, or concentration changes, sleep disturbances, lymphedema, fertility issues, neuropathies, and if I left yours out, excuse me, but it's a long list of different types of side effects that our cancer survivors can experience. And it's hard to determine who will or will not have late or long-term side effects. Usually there's no one single reason. It's more likely a combination of reasons, such as the type and dose of cancer treatment that it was needed, whether or not an individual had side effects during treatment and how severe they were, and then chronic health problems, hypertension, diabetes, arthritis. So, and then the quality of care, including the knowledge and skill of your healthcare team. To increase the quality of care among survivors, the Institute of Medicine launched a report that really described the essential components of survivorship care. An organization called the National Comprehensive Cancer Network adopted these standards to include a discussion of what you heard Dr. Roth refer to as the plan of the following components. Prevention, first, prevention, second, surveillance, third, assessment, fourth, intervention, next, coordination of care between the PCPs and the specialists, and then, of course, survivorship care planning. Now, I just gave you some bits and pieces of that because our next speaker, Dr. Flushman, will provide greater detail on the importance of treatment summaries for comprehensive and coordinated follow-up care of cancer survivors. I want to emphasize two points regarding treatment summaries or care plans that they may often be referred to. First, a survivorship care plan is vital to every provider's visit. You never know what a provider is going to ask you about your medical history. Remember, it includes essential information about your cancer and its treatment, and that can facilitate communication between you and your provider. Second, keep your plan readily available as a roadmap to ensure you get the necessary tests. Don't hide it under the mattress. Don't put it up in a book that you forgot which book it was. Keep it in a handy area where you know you can easily access it. A patient's cancer treatment may be given a survivorship care plan when the treatment is completed. If you would like one but did not get one, ask a team member about it. You can also visit various sites like NCI, ACS, or ASCO, and Cancer Care websites for more information on care plans and follow-up medical care. And I have those websites which we can get to you after this. I think Dr. Messner will address that information. And again, Dr. Messner, our last speaker, will address available resources from cancer care, such as educational information, support groups, and online resources. I will mention also that there are resources available from other organizations or such as the Veterans Affairs, the National Cancer Institute, the American Society of Clinical Oncologists, and then there are many site-specific organizations such as the Lymphoma and Leukemia Society that provide information on survivorship. So I want to close my session by sending a few reminders to our callers. Number one, practice self-care as often as possible. Take time for yourself, and you know what? Don't feel guilty about it. Number two, communicate openly and often with your healthcare team, even just to let them know that you're doing fine. Providers like to receive those type of messages. Practice self-management in your care, and be sure and monitor your own physical and emotional health so you can report that accurately to your providers. Follow up with your primary care provider or oncologist to receive follow-up care. Some healthcare facilities offer survivorship clinics. Take advantage of those opportunities. All providers in these clinics specialize in follow-up care of survivors. Fifth, reach out to mental health professionals when feeling incredibly blue or sad. And you know what? Just as a note to our caregivers and providers, you can also practice these tips. Unfortunately, or sadly, these groups often neglect their own health and quality of life. In closing, I would like to share a view of cancer that a cancer survivor gave me or shared with me. And the survivor was a survivor of 20 years. She said, lesson learned? I've learned that by adjusting to living with my cancer and actively participating in my care, my level of uncertainty and fear decreased, and my sense of control increased, which helped me shape my quality of life in a good way. So this concludes my remarks, Dr. Messner, and I'd like to turn the program back to you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Bellis. That was just a wonderful call, just a really fantastic, presentation that you've given to us, and so much information. We will provide those links to the websites that you've mentioned and the telephone numbers as well. There's a lot of resources. So when the program ends, you'll be getting a SurveyMonkey evaluation, and it takes a couple of days to get that. A week, whatever, but you'll get that evaluation, and when you get it, you'll get all the resources that Dr. Paul has mentioned, as well as other resources as well. So just to be aware that that there will be you'll be getting that information from us. Thank you so much, Dr. Paul. I have a little questions for you during the Q&A as well. Just a wonderful presentation. Thank you, Ms. Feller, as well. And our next speaker is Dr. Lydia Shapira. Dr. Shapira is Professor of Medicine and Oncology, Stanford University School of Medicine, Director of Cancer Survivorship Program, Stanford Comprehensive Cancer Center, Director of CME Program Development, Department of Medicine. And Dr. Shapira will be addressing finding your new normal and follow up with your oncologist and primary care doctor, including discussion of health screening and concerns. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Shapira.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner. What a pleasure it is to participate and to hear my colleagues, Dr. Roth and Dr. Palos, give such erudite, beautiful presentations. Dr. Roth helped us understand many of the psychological and whole person issues that emerge after diagnosis of cancer, and he did talk about subjectivity, meaning the lived experience of every person. And Dr. Palos talked to us about the quality of life, and again used the same word, the subjectivity, meaning that so much of what we're talking about has to do with how every individual, every unique person understands their body, their experience, their story, and their cancer story, and how they tell the story to others. And so from a very practical point of view, I just want to start by reflecting with you that I was very moved when I watched the video released yesterday by Princess Kate describing her subjective lived experience now of being a cancer survivor. You look at the video, which is available, and what you see if you don't listen to anything is scenes of a beautiful family walking in the woods and playing cards together and at the beach, and it just looks like images of a happy family with lots of love. And you listen to the voiceover, and what you hear is what those of us who are professionals here in our offices and those of you who are living in this world experience yourself and here in your communities, which is that it's difficult to live with uncertainty, that there's so much of that floating around that one has to find solid ground again, that one feels a lot of gratitude for being alive and for the kindnesses shared and the moments of compassion, but that it is work. And there's an effort required in wanting to go back to work, wanting to establish a new normal. And I would say that from my 30 years of experience, what I heard Princess Kate say was an appreciation of normal. And that is something that, you know, perhaps cancer survivors understand better than everybody else. So normal after cancer is sometimes difficult to define. And what I want to tell you in a few minutes is basically the advice and the conversations that I have with my friends, my family members, my patients about finding health, finding normal after cancer. And that requires an effort. We need information, but very importantly, each one of you needs to work on telling your cancer story and communicating with the people who can help you going forward. And that includes people working in primary care. I know from what many of my patients have struggled with that our healthcare system in the U.S. and perhaps those of you in other countries will resonate with some of this, maybe not, is that in the U.S., sometimes healthcare is fragmented and it's difficult to find a team that comes together to help you in the same way that maybe a cancer team was formed after your diagnosis and treatment for cancer. So it requires an effort, but it's really important to have a clinician, a nurse practitioner, physician assistant, a doctor who practices primary care, because these are the people who will help you to stay healthy and will be able to alert you to screening and other measures that you need in order to protect your health. It's important to be able to tell them your cancer story, and not everybody may want to listen, and I know that that may be a problem. But thinking about the communication, thinking about telling your cancer story is something that all of you can do. And I think that learning to trust, maybe finding somebody you can trust, but learning to trust the advice of that primary care clinician is really important, and have them lead you to help you understand what other tests you may need. One of the models that we like in the U.S. and other countries is the idea either of shared care or co-management, so that even while you're getting your cancer treatment, we ask our patients and we ask for cancer clinicians to stay in touch with that person's primary care doctor or clinician so that they are not left out of the loop. But after cancer, certainly it's important to restore that sense of having open communication between the different people taking care of you. So my advice is to think about the fact that your experience is unique. Think about how you tell the story. Think about how you communicate, and find somebody you can trust and then follow up. You need to show up for regular visits. You need to present the treatments that you have, and these are, of course, ideally recorded in some form of a treatment summary, but you also need to be flexible and open to understand that there may be other issues that arise in your health. And having passed through cancer doesn't mean that you also will never get another illness. And all of us who get older and all of us who take care of older patients know that many have several other illnesses that require attention as well. Some may have been caused or worsened by cancer treatment, but some may be totally independent. So in my last few minutes, I would say that I would like to leave you with an optimistic, hopeful message that it's important to invest an effort in finding health after cancer. However you identify or think about your cancer experience is totally up to you, but being able to share that and finding a team that can work together and making the effort to show up for regular preventative visits and get the opinions of your oncologist, but also trust your primary care, is probably the best thing you can do to have a healthy future. Thank you, Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Shapiro. That was just a wonderful presentation, as always, and just very helpful to everybody to really think about how they can work on. I think, as you mentioned, Princess Kate, that in terms of just really that story that she's been able to tell now in the video is what many people deal with themselves, but then of course the issue is how do you find yourself, how do you find who you are now? So just wonderful, and I know we'll have questions about that during the Q&A as well. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Stuart Fleischman, and Dr. Fleischman is a former founding director of Cancer Support Services, Continuum Cancer Centers of New York, now part of the Mount Sinai Health System, author and researcher in oncology. And Dr. Fleischman will be discussing the importance of treatment summaries and encounter notes and guidelines to prepare for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, and discussion of open notes. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Fleischman.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. And again, thank everybody who has signed on the call. It's really important to get as much information as possible, and this is one way to do it. And thank you to Dr. Shapira and Dr. Palos and
Dr. Roth.
Dr. Roth, thank you for giving the information that they have. Working now as a volunteer in a clinic as a primary care provider for people who don't have insurance, it really does strike me how confused some of our primary care colleagues get when looking at a lot of the information that's coming from our cancer treatment centers. And having that treatment summary that everybody has described is invaluable because it summarizes, as the title suggests, you know, what kind of cancer you've had, what treatment you've had, what are the possible long-term effects, what test or vigilance needs to be, a program needs to be put in place, and the kinds of things that each patient can do, especially with regard to tobacco use and alcohol use and lifestyle changes in order to be able to stay healthy and cancer-free as long as possible. That information, all in one place, is really helpful to primary care providers, especially if they work in a system that is outside of the organization where you've gotten your cancer treatment, be it in a private oncologist's office, in a county or a not-for-profit or for-profit hospital where that primary care provider does not have access to records. So getting that information, sometimes the best way to do that is for you to have that actual document on a piece of paper or electronically and to bring that to your provider. Sometimes they can access it automatically through a shared agreements to read medical records from other facilities, but not always. So having that is really important, and it's good for you to see the kinds of things that are being suggested by the cancer treatment team as to what kinds of testing should be done, at what intervals, as well as the kinds of things you can do in everyday life in order to stay cancer-free and adjust to this quote, new normal that everybody has been talking about. Looking at just the encounter notes that are sometimes are posted to the electronic medical record. If you're getting your primary care or you're getting your cancer treatment in a facility that actually posts notes, may be somewhat confusing because they're not set up to provide the kind of information in a concise, clear way that the treatment summaries are. So treatment summaries, although they are extra work for your cancer treatment team, are extraordinarily helpful for your ongoing care well after your surgery, chemotherapy, radiation therapy, hormones, or other treatments have completed. So I really can't emphasize that enough. I was asked to speak about the issue of using telehealth during treatment and afterwards. Telehealth as something that none of us were really very experienced with until the COVID pandemic, and now we've excitedly adopted telehealth for a number of our visits. Obviously, telehealth visits, if they're on the phone, they're audio only, or if they have a video component, still can't provide the kind of physical examination that we may need either during an initial consultation or for follow-up visits, but it can take care of a lot of the decision-making that you and your primary cancer treatment team can actually make as treatment progresses. So they can be very helpful in the right time. And if you are asked to use telehealth and you're unfamiliar with it, please gather some information from the secretary or the receptionist or whoever is making the appointment for you. Telehealth calls can be made on a variety of these systems, be it a regular telephone, or on a computer, or on a tablet, or a smartphone, where you get video and audio on the phone at once. If it's your first time on a telehealth visit with this provider, make sure you know how to connect. Sometimes they will actually connect with you a day or two in advance and just a dry run, a practice connection to make sure that you know what to do and they have all the right numbers and ways to make sure to get to you at the proper time. If you were going into the office and you are preparing for your visit, a list of questions can be very helpful. Here is where telehealth may actually have somewhat of an advantage over an in-person visit, in that it's good to have somebody with you going to these appointments at times, especially if you have a lot of questions or there's a lot of information you're learning that may be hard to absorb. That person no longer needs to be by your side. They can be in another city, in another state, in another country, as long as they have access to the internet to be able to sign on to the call with you. That's an extraordinary advantage that we didn't anticipate before the COVID-19 pandemic. It's important to make sure, in addition, that you're in a quiet place, that if you are the device you're using, if it has a battery, is fully charged. You certainly don't want that battery to run out during your visit. And that you have the list of questions available or somebody on the line with you to be able to help you make sure that all your questions are answered. Telehealth visits, like in-person visits, sometimes can be rushed if you have a lot of questions, and prioritizing which ones are the most important may be an important thing to do before the telehealth visit. But knowing how to connect and having the proper place to do it is very important. One of the other things that's happened as a result of our privacy and confidentiality and portability laws in the United States for our medical records is that if your cancer treatment team works in a program that uses an electronic medical record, you may have access to some of those documents through a patient portal. That means that with the proper entry and password and registering your username, you'd be able to actually sign in and look at the notes from your visit, or even lab tests, imaging reports, sometimes even the actual images themselves. And because of a quirk when the law was written way back when, you may have access to that information before your provider actually sees them. This can be very confusing and somewhat frightening, and the best thing to do is to not read them and jump to conclusions like something is terribly wrong, which many, many patients are still doing. But make an appointment, whether it's on the phone or in person, with someone from your provider's practice to be able to go over these results. It is very common for results during treatment, be it during chemotherapy or radiation therapy, to be abnormal, and that's a good sign as far as how your treatment is going. Not a bad thing. And it's very hard for those of us who are not trained in oncology, really familiar with all this, to be able to know that. Also, the kind of language that's used about a common phrase is clinical correlation advised, maybe something in an X-ray or a CAT scan or an MRI or a PET scan, where it needs that's sort of a note to the providers that this information needs to be taken in context. And that's why discussing these with your providers is really important. It's really hard, especially when something shows up on a Friday afternoon late, for you to sit with this information and be worried that things are terrible part of the report that may signal trouble ahead. But please don't do that. Please make an appointment to speak with someone from your practice who knows how to interpret these tests so that you have a clear sense of what's going on. My personal experience with this is that very few people assume things are good and panic. people often think that something is really terrible and they panic, and much of it is unnecessary. Those are the topics I was asked to address, so I will turn the call back over to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Fleischman. That was just a wonderful presentation. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A as well. Thank you so much. Thank you. And our next speaker is Ms. Sarah Whalen, and Ms. Whalen is an oncology social worker at Cancer Care, and she'll be discussing Cancer Care's free programs and services, and we'll discuss our Hope Line and website as well. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Whalen.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, for the opportunity to participate in this call and the introduction, and thank you, everyone, for participating so far. Like Dr. Messner said, my name is Sarah Whalen. I am a licensed oncology social worker here at Cancer Care. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization providing free professional support services and information to help people manage the emotional, practical, and financial challenges of a cancer diagnosis. Our comprehensive services include resource navigation, counseling, support groups, educational workshops, publications, and limited financial assistance. To become connected to any of these services, you can call our National Hope Line at 800-813-4673 to speak to an oncology social worker. As many of our wonderful speakers have mentioned today, the end of treatment can be a time of mixed feelings and unexpected stress. Many people also find themselves unsure of how to move forward, wondering, now what? Common emotions faced by survivors include joy, relief, a sense of accomplishment, anger or sadness about having gone through such a serious illness, guilt for completing treatment when others weren't able to do so, confusion about what you've been through, concerns about the future, and anxiety and fear about the cancer coming back. While talking with family and friends can provide you with comfort and support, they may not be fully aware of the emotional challenges that come after treatment is over. Joining a support group can be a way of getting additional support through this time. Cancer Care offers online support groups to individuals across the country. These groups are for those in active treatment who are post-treatment and survivorship caregivers, as well as the bereaved. Our support groups can allow you to share with and learn from others who are facing similar issues, such as the fear of the cancer coming back, living with uncertainty, lingering side effects, and going back to work. If you're interested in learning more about the support services Cancer Care offers, I encourage you to explore our website, which is www.cancercare.org. And of course, you can call our National Hope Line at 800-813-4673 to speak to one of our oncology social workers. Thank you for your attention and the opportunity to speak on this informative program. I will now turn our program back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Whalen. That was a superb presentation and the wonderful resources at Cancer Care, which we'll be talking more about during the Q&A as well. And now we're going to move right into the Q&A. And I'm going to ask Rob to explain to you how to queue up the questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
And a question for Dr. Roth. Dr. Roth, as a navigator, is there a specific time frame in the cancer treatment cycle that one should start to share information on cancer survivorship?
I guess my question is from a navigator's point of view, meaning an administrator? I'm not quite
I think as someone who works with patients in terms of someone who helps patients think those things through in terms of when they mm-hmm. should share information on cancer survivorship.
I'm always hesitant to use the word should for anything because we all operate on different timelines depending on what we're able to incorporate in terms of information and support and what we may have to learn how to incorporate. And so I'd say as early as possible, but during the actual treatment period, I think it's very hard for most people to think of themselves as survivors. They're going through what some still call a fight or a battle with their cancer. Many are upset by that kind of a terminology that's always militaristic. But I think being aware of the issues that crop up may be, again, more important than the label for when someone ought to be thinking about the issues of survivors and what comes next and how to be focusing on a general healthcare plan for them through cancer and then after cancer.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Dr. And for Dr. Shapira, how long should I expect to see my oncology team after being in remission? What are some factors that impact the number of follow-ups?
That's a brilliant question, and a question that I can't answer for everybody. There are guidelines that are used, guidelines put out by professional society with recommendations for how often the visits need to be, and that varies by diagnosis, by disease, and also by year. So for some, it may be needing to see the oncologist every 3 months for 3 years. Others, it may be every 3 to 6 months for 5 years. If you don't need a technical exam, such as, say, laryngoscopy, which is what some people with head and neck or oral cancers need, then again, the question is who should be doing those visits? It's possible to see the oncologist and then see maybe a radiation oncologist or a primary care doctor. There are models of co-management of survivors between oncologists and primary care doctors. So I can't answer the question only to say this. You need to ask your oncologist what is the frequency of the visits and for how long, and then ask a follow-up question, which is, can these visits be shared by different specialists, or can the primary care doctor be included as part of the follow-up team? And the answer is going to depend on the local resources, the willingness and the preparedness of the primary care doctor to engage in cancer survivorship care, and the oncologist recommendations.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Question. This one for Dr. Fleischman, I have a lot more free time now that I am no longer in treatment, but I'm still low energy. Can you recommend any activities that I can do to fill up my time but won't be exhausted after?
Well, that's a good question. It really depends upon what you enjoy, what kinds of things you enjoyed, especially before your treatment started, and adopting things in small pieces. So often looking at a whole activity may seem overwhelming, but looking at 10 minutes of it at first may actually be a way to start again. It seems daunting, but if you do it in little pieces, sometimes a big piece can actually grow out of that as if you increase the time and effort slowly.
Excellent. Thank you. And a question for Ms. Whalen. Do you know of any financial aid resources to help cover the costs of mental health care? I've been struggling with guilt and depression, and I would like to see someone, but I don't think I can afford to. Could you comment on just the services that are available, perhaps that aren't, but it might be available to someone that may not cost a whole lot, nonprofits?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. So a lot of nonprofits do offer, you know, free individual counseling sessions, such as cancer care, including some disease-specific organizations as well. If you're diagnosed with the Blood Cancer, Leukemia, and Lymphoma Society, or Susan G. Komen, they have good resources. I typically also recommend looking through your insurance and seeing what services may be covered through there, as well as speaking with your hospital social workers to see if they have any referrals locally that they can provide, or if they can provide you with some of that support as well. In that transition to survivorship. Some nonprofits may also be able to help cover some of those expenses, and some mental health providers do offer sliding scales. So based on your insurance, you can pay what you may be able to afford, and they can slide their payment costs to adjust to your income level and things like that.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And I'm going to ask our speakers to provide a takeaway for all of you. I'll start with Dr. Roth, then Dr. Shapira, Dr. Fleischman, and Ms. Whalen. So Dr. Roth, do you want to go first? Is this a takeaway, a two-minute takeaway for
sure.
Participants?
Thank you. I think it's important to not get bogged down by the labels, but to appreciate that getting cancer treatment has its own trajectory for each person who goes through it. And to be thinking throughout the different phases that you're going through, what can you do to be as fully engaged in the treatment when your energy is up, when your energy is down, when you're having symptoms, when you're not having symptoms, and not necessarily to jump to the worst conclusion that either treatment isn't working or it's a failure or you're a failure. Communication with your treatment team is very important, and I think it's been mentioned a number of times today to find things to do to stay engaged, to try to find as much sense of control within a situation that has very little control. So the things that you can control, you know, perhaps with hydration, perhaps with what you're eating, perhaps with a little walk around the block, those kinds of things, even though they may be different than what you used to be able to do, are very important. Staying engaged with your family, with your friends, as best as possible will help people survive survivorship.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Dr. Roth. And Dr. Shapira?
Oh, building on that, those very wise words, I would add this. Survivorship takes work. This is what I've learned from interviewing many people and many colleagues, healthcare professionals who've had cancer, who tell me that the work of survivorship sometimes is harder than getting through cancer treatment. It requires effort. And as my colleague Dr. Roth just said, finding ways of thinking about it, adopting mindsets that help you feel that you actually can do this may be useful to you. There's no good or bad way of doing this. There's a lot of subjectivity and uniqueness in personal cancer stories. But I think finding what is useful to you to stay oriented towards the future, to be able to communicate your needs, and to find people who can support you, both professionals and also, you know, peers or family members and friends. But basically recognizing that there's an effort involved in getting through this instead of reconstituting yourself, so to speak, and finding your way of thinking about your health and your story and your body, mind, spirit after you've gone through the experience of cancer treatment. There are lots of things that need to be done, and there are lots of things that need to be processed, and that often takes some support as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you. And very wonderful words. And Dr. Fleischman.
Yes, hi. All good advice. As you're finishing cancer, your cancer treatment, just ask your treatment team how the information about your treatment is being forwarded to your primary care doctor, and ask the primary care doctor when you see him or her first, or a nurse practitioner, your primary care provider, who, if they're to confirm that they've actually gotten the information, really important. And I think the second main takeaway is to be really careful about reading and interpreting notes and test results in the patient portal if you have access to your electronic health record, and ask your cancer treatment team for help.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And Ms. Whalen?
Absolutely. Following on all of that great advice, I think nothing is going to change overnight. I think giving yourself grace to process what you need to process. A cancer experience is, like everybody has said, incredibly subjective and personalized. Your story may not be the same as anyone else's, but all I say this to all my clients all the time. Give yourself the grace to feel what you need to feel. If you wake up and expect everything to be different, you're just going to continue to be disappointed. So give yourself that grace to feel what you need to feel, process those emotions, get the support you need, ask for help, and take things one day at a time.
Excellent. Wow, that's fantastic. I have to say, I want to thank all of our participants. You've been phenomenal. I want to thank our speakers as well. I think the synchrony between all of you has been just wonderful. Although we've done these programs before, your questions were just superb on this program, and of course, our speakers were wonderful in addressing them. We weren't able to take all of your questions just because there were so many of you on the call and so many questions as well. But please know that you can always contact Cancer Care for any help or services that you need. It's a free nonprofit organization. And we will be sending you a whole lot of information about other organizations that can provide you support as well for different types of cancer as well as cancer care. And we'll also include the resources that our speakers mentioned as well. I just want to thank you all for your participation today. And Ayanna, wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.